Well, I think it's a bit of a misnomer to if anyone suggested that they ever stopped being active. In fact, they've been active in many locations, particularly out west, where they've continued engaging in violence in public at protests, often without any police interaction or police enforcement. It's a group that has had troubled leadership from the beginning and has always been somewhat balkanized with various chapters around the country, not necessarily always singing the same tune. There was a significant rift within the chapter system because some chapters are openly white supremacist while others claim they are not. So these groups have always been active. And unfortunately, the inattention that the FBI has given them from their origin continues. So even as many of the leaders of the groups that assaulted the Capitol are facing charges, many who participated in the activities at the Capitol continue to engage in violence around the country. And as you suggest, this isn't necessarily nihilistic violence. This is somewhat coordinated. They've attached themselves to any number of activist groups that are engaging in the types of public protests that used to be pro-Trump rallies, you know, whether they're anti-vax or anti-critical race theory. So that tends to bring them closer to the local government institutions. Obviously, their interest in traveling around the country is somewhat curbed by the enforcement around the Capitol attack, but they're still quite active.
Let's talk about the local piece. What I've seen in some situations is that they have, as you mentioned, these local chapters that are becoming or seem to be becoming more active as the national chapter has not so much done. What have you seen with reference to that?
Yes, they've certainly become even more decentralized to the extent that they were ever centralized. You know, they always had local chapters that participated in local events. But because you had unifying issue in the pro-Trump rallies, that made it seem as if there was a lot of coordination. And there were a group of them that were traveling nationally to participate in this violence, particularly, again, out west, where they would travel interstate often to engage in violence. And for unexplained reasons, that interstate travel didn't seem to attract the FBI attention. And unfortunately, the way the Justice Department and the FBI are looking at the Capitol attack as if it's a standalone event, rather than recognizing it was the culmination of months and years of violence and organizing that ended up bringing that many people to the Capitol ready for violence.
So as they become more decentralized and work in these locations, you know, I've seen reporting from the West Coast to North Carolina. As they engage in this activity, have you seen any information that gives you any understanding of the impact that they're having or not?
I think that's hard to measure. And of course, the Proud Boys are just one group of many in the far right militia world. My concern has long been the law enforcement affinity for these groups. And what we're seeing is much of the violence that is still occurring in public isn't being policed. And that gives these groups the impression that their violence is sanctioned by law enforcement, so that they're actually operating from the opinion that they are an auxiliary force for law enforcement and for those elements of government that want to rule by force rather than by democratic vote. So it's extremely troubling to our system, because if the local police are not treating them as the threat that they are, it's very difficult for a local school board or local representatives to get the protection they need to ensure that they can do their jobs without a threat of violence.
Some of these groups that they've reached out to, some of these groups that they're working with, what are some of the other organizations that they found common cause with that you know of?
Well, they often appear at rallies alongside white supremacist groups. And that's been true all across the country. And even where some of the Proud Boy groups disavow white supremacy, they seem to be in common cause with them when they're committing violence on the streets. And they've also attached to many local Republican groups. In Oregon, there was a local Republican group that hired Proud Boys to act as security for one of their events. Likewise, in Washington state, a Proud Boy was acting as the sergeant at arms at a Republican event. So unfortunately, there is an element of support for these groups within the community, despite their history of violence. And some would argue because of their history of violence, that intimidating presence that they bring to a public event, it is part of the allure of partnering with them.
You know, I kind of wonder as well, as you talk about these groups, that they, you know, Republican or whatever political groups, and maybe other activist groups that, you know, are active in these local places, and you know, they're arm in arm with the Proud Boys. And so when you have these groups working on a local level, as opposed to, you know, people coming from other places that aren't familiar with these places, it seems to me that there is a connection between these people in these groups to these local communities. Do you see that as a limiting factor for how far they would go? Because these communities that they're working in are the places they grew up, and there are people there that they know that they care about.
We haven't seen that. You know, what we've seen is they're very prepared for and willing to engage in violence in public. And that's really what's different from when I investigated far-right militia groups as an FBI agent in the 1990s, is that if they committed violence in public, law enforcement would respond to that. And perhaps not as aggressively as it needed to when that violence was reported by the community, but it wasn't committed in public. So what I noticed, and the reason why I started focusing my work in this area after around 2016, when the Proud Boys formed, is that they were increasingly willing to commit violence in public, and law enforcement was not responding to that, which I knew would be dangerous. If you look at any authoritarian system, the way many authoritarians gain emergency powers is by tacitly authorizing a group of thugs to go out and commit violence against their political opponents. And when the public finally gets tired of that street violence, they call for more aggressive emergency laws to prevent it. And that then gives the authoritarian the authority to take action against any political opponent. And we've seen that across the country with Republican legislatures passing anti-protest laws, making it more difficult for groups that oppose these methods to engage the tools of our democracy to make their point. So it's quite troubling. And unfortunately, while the Justice Department and the FBI certainly have their hands full with the hundreds of cases regarding January 6th attack on the Capitol, I'm concerned that their failure to connect it to violence in the past and violence that continued post January 6th, and understand that that threat still persists.
Mike German is a fellow with the Brennan Center for Justice's Liberty and National Security Program. JJ Green, WTOP News.